Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Let's jump right in today. We're looking at some really fascinating new research, taking a deep molecular look at a very common and serious health issue.
That's right.
We're diving into obstructive sleep apnea, OSA. You probably know it. It's that sleep disorder, breathing stops and starts, airway blockage, disrupts sleep, often, loud snoring. Mm. But the sources we're looking at make it really clear it's way more than just a nuisance. OSA is actually a major risk factor for serious stuff like cardiovascular disease, even increased mortality.
Absolutely. And the clinical picture for OSA, it's actually quite complex. I mean, CPAP therapy, mm-hmm. it's a gold standard, works wonders for many people, definitely.
Yeah.
But, a significant number of patients, they still struggle with residual symptoms or related health problems, even when they're using the treatment.
Mm.
Which suggests, doesn't it, that the problem isn't just sort of purely mechanical obstruction.
Mm.
There are probably deeper biological things going on that, current therapy doesn't fully get at.
And that's exactly what our source material for this deep dive is getting into. It's looking beyond just the airway mechanics and digging into the circulating myrnome. That's a term we'll definitely unpack.
Right.
And they're combining that with powerful tools like machine learning and bioinformatics. The goal, it seems, is to really map out the underlying biological story of OSA, find potential new targets for treatment.
And the source itself, it's a solid one, a multi-center study looking at a really large group, over 500 patients who were suspected of having OSA. So good data.
Okay, so our mission today, let's follow the study's journey. How did they use these cutting-edge tools to uncover secrets about OSA, at that molecular level?
Yeah.
And what could these findings actually mean for how we treat OSA down the line? Let's unpack this.
Okay, so first things first, microRNAs.
RNAs.
What are they? Well, think of them as tiny bits of genetic code, really short pieces of RNA, but they don't actually code for proteins themselves.
Right, the non-coding part.
Exactly, non-coding RNAs. Their main job is regulation. They act like molecular dimmer switches, basically, controlling when and how much other genes get expressed. They do this by binding to the messenger RNAs of those genes.
So they're like little fine-tuners for your genetic instructions, kind of adjusting the volume.
That's a great way to put it, fine-tuners.
Mm.
And because they control so many different genes, they're involved in, pretty much every important biological process you can think of. Development, disease.
Okay.
Including conditions affecting the lungs and breathing.
Okay, and what makes them particularly interesting for something like OSA, according to the source anyway?
Well, what's really interesting is that miRNAs aren't just stuck inside cells. They can actually be packaged up, sent out, and travel through the bloodstream.
Ah.
So when they're circulating like this, they can act almost like signaling molecules, communicating between different cells, different tissues, even far apart in the body, like little messages. So looking at this circulating miRNome, which is basically the whole collection of these miRNAs floating around in your blood plasma, it gives researchers a kind of snapshot, a window into the body's molecular state, right? And how it might be changing because of a disease like OSA.
Got it. A biological snapshot from the blood. So how did this specific study use that window to look at OSA?
They were quite systematic. They used a phased approach. Started with that big group, 525 patients with suspected OSA. Phase one was the discovery phase.
Okay.
Here, they used RNA sequencing, which is basically reading all the different RNA molecules present, but they did it on the plasma from a smaller, carefully matched subset, just 53 patients.
Matched how? Like age, BMI?
Exactly. Matched for key characteristics to make the comparison fair between those with and without OSA in this initial group. The goal here was really to cast a wide net. See if any potential miRNA candidates look different between the OSA patients and the controls. In this phase, it flagged about 38 possibilities.
38 candidates. Okay, that's a start. But, how do you know which ones are genuinely important and not just, random noise in the data?
Good question. That's where the next step comes in. The technical validation phase. They took those same 53 samples, but this time they used a different, more precise method, RT-qPCR.
Oh, okay.
Think of the sequencing like quickly scanning the whole library catalog. RT-qPCR is like going back and very carefully counting the exact number of copies of those 38 specific books you flagged.
More targeted counting.
Precisely. This validation step helped confirm the initial findings, and it let them narrow the list down significantly to just 11 miRNAs. These 11 showed a really strong, statistically significant difference, and importantly, they correlated well with the AHI.
Ah, AHI, the apnea hypopnea index. That's the standard measure for how severe the OSA is, right? How many breathing disruptions per hour of sleep.
Exactly that. So correlating with AHI means these 11 miRNAs seem to track along with the severity of the OSA itself, which makes them much more interesting.
Makes sense.
So now they have these 11 promising candidates confirmed in the smaller group. They move to the big one, the comprehensive evaluation phase.
Right.
This is where they measured those specific 11 miRNAs in the, well, the rest of the study population.
Right.
So excluding those initial 53 discovery patients, that gave them another 472 patients, a much larger data set to really test these 11 candidates.
And in that larger group, what did the clinical picture look like? Did it match what we generally see with OSA?
Oh, absolutely. It confirmed the typical profile.
Mm-hmm.
In this larger group, the patients with OSA, they tended to be older, more likely to be male. They had higher BMI, body mass index,
right,
and also a higher prevalence of related health issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things like high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, high cholesterol, all the usual suspects that often go along with OSA.
And their sleep study results
showed more severe OSA too.
Yeah.
Higher AHI scores, as you'd expect, lower oxygen levels during sleep, more hypoxemia, and generally more fragmented, disrupted sleep compared to the folks without OSA in the study.
Okay, so now they've got data on these 11 specific miRNAs across hundreds of patients, plus all this detailed clinical information. That sounds like a ton of data to sift through. This is where the machine learning comes in, I guess.
You nailed it. Absolutely essential here. When you're dealing with complex biology, right, where you've got molecules interacting in these really intricate networks, simple statistics alone might miss the bigger picture.
Too many moving parts.
Exactly. You need tools that can look at everything together and find the most important signals, the patterns hidden in all that complexity.
Right.
And that's what machine learning, specifically techniques called feature selection, helps with. It's basically a smart computational way to sift through those 11 miRNA candidates, maybe other clinical factors too, and pick out the ones that are most informative,
mm-hmm.
the ones that really help distinguish or understand OSA.
And the study authors, they didn't just rely on one method, did they? I saw they used three different ML approaches. Why do that?
Yeah, that's a really strong part of the study design. They did it for robustness. Basically, if you have multiple different analytical techniques, different algorithms, and they all point towards the same key factors,
you can be more confident it's real.
Exactly. You gain a lot more confidence in your findings.
So they use three distinct ML methods. The paper names them as Abruta, VSURF, and SPLS. They're just different algorithms, different ways of asking the data. What are the most important features here?
Okay, and this is where that combined approach, the miRNAs plus the ML, really delivered. What did the machine learning consistently pull out?
Well, across all three of those different machine learning methods, three specific miRNAs just kept rising to the top consistently.
Uh-huh.
They were flagged again and again as the most informative, the ones carrying the strongest, clearest signal related to OSA in this large patient group.
And those were, let me check my notes, LED75P, MIR15A5P, and MIR107. Okay, so these three little molecules are now the prime suspects in the molecular story of OSA based on this big study.
That's the takeaway, yes. But okay, knowing which miRNAs are important is like one piece of the puzzle. You still need to figure out what they might actually be doing, right? What's their function?
Exactly right. Knowing which is step one. Step two is figuring out the what and the how. And that's where the bioinformatics tools come into play.
Right.
Using computational methods and these huge biological databases, they started predicting the target genes. Which genes are these three key miRNAs likely regulating? Remember the dimmer switch idea?
Yeah, which lights are they dimming?
Precisely. And then once you have a list of potential target genes, you can ask, what biological pathways, what cellular functions are enriched in that list? What kinds of jobs do those genes normally do? It's like mapping the potential ripple effect of these three miRNAs on the cell's machinery.
And they use standard databases for that.
Yeah, well-established ones. KGGO, Reactome. These are basically massive encyclopedias cataloging known gene functions and biological processes. Very standard tools for this kind of analysis called functional enrichment.
Okay, so what kind of cellular processes did this mapping point to? What parts of the cell's daily operations seem to be linked to these key miRNAs in OSA?
Well, the analysis predominantly highlighted pathways involved in some really fundamental cellular events, things like cell death, the programmed kind, apoptosis.
Okay.
Also cell differentiation, that's how cells become specialized. Extracellular remodeling, which is about maintaining the structure around cells, the tissue matrix. And also other key processes like autophagy, sort of cellular housekeeping or recycling and metabolism.
Wow, that's pretty fundamental stuff.
It is. And it's fascinating because it provides this potential molecular link between OSA and these specific cellular problems and dysfunctions that go way beyond just the physical closing of the airway. It starts to paint a picture of what might be happening at a cellular level.
Okay, so we've got chemiRNAs. They're linked computationally to these core cellular pathways like cell death. Can we make this connection even stronger, more concrete? I think this is where the study took another really clever step.
It did. This is where they tried to validate things externally. The researchers took the list of predicted target genes that came out of their bioinformatics analysis.
Yeah.
And they went looking for them in other data sets, external, publicly available data sets from totally separate studies. This is such a crucial step in science, right? Does your finding actually hold up when you look at data collected by different people, maybe using different methods or even looking at different parts of the body?
It really tests the generalizability, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. So what did they find when they cross-referenced their predictions with these independent outside data sets?
Something pretty striking. Across three independent external data sets, and these weren't all the same, they came from different tissue types, which is mm-hmm. important.
Like what?
Well, one was plasma, like their own study.
Okay.
But another was subcutaneous fat tissue. And the third was from peripheral blood mononuclear cells, PBMCs, which are basically immune cells found in the blood.
Okay, so different tissues.
And across all three, one specific gene called TFDP2 stood out. Not only was it predicted by their analysis to be a target of two of their key miRNAs, LUT7D5P and miR15A5P,
right.
But its expression level, how active the gene was, showed significant differences between people with OSA and people without OSA. And this difference was seen consistently across all three of those independent data sets from different tissues.
Wow. Okay. That is a powerful validation. Plasma, fat, immune cells, all pointing towards this TFDP2 gene being different in OSA. So let's zoom in on TFDP2. What is this gene and what does it, you know, normally do?
Okay. So TFDP2, it's what's called a transcription factor. Remember we said miRNAs are like dimmer switches regulating genes?
Yeah.
Well, transcription factors are another key type of gene regulator. They're proteins that bind directly to DNA and basically control whether a gene gets turned on or off.
Yeah.
TFDP2 belongs to a family called the DP factors, and it likes to team up, form partnerships with other proteins called E2F factors. And these TFDP2F pairs, together, they are known regulators. They control a whole bunch of genes, critical for cell cycle progression, how cells grow and divide, also cell differentiation, like we mentioned before, and importantly for this story, program cell death, apoptosis.
Apoptosis again. Okay, so connecting TFDP2's role in regulating apoptosis back to what we already sort of suspect about OSA.
Exactly. We already have evidence that apoptosis, that program cell death process, is part of the pathology in OSA. It's thought to be driven, at least partly, by the intermittent hypoxia, those repeated drops in oxygen levels.
Right, it's the stress on the cells.
And the resulting surge in reactive oxygen species, ROS, that oxidative stress everyone talks about. That happens during those breathing pauses, the apneas. And previous studies have actually shown evidence of altered apoptosis, like in the cells lining blood vessels, endothelial cells, and also in immune cells, leukocytes, in people with OSA.
So if TFDP2 helps control apoptosis and its levels are different in OSA across multiple tissues, this study is suggesting it could be a potential contributor to that specific cellular damage pathway that we see in OSA.
Precisely. It connects the dots. It links the molecular changes they found through the miRNAs and the ML all the way to a known mechanism of harm, of pathology in the condition itself. It provides a really plausible biological link.
Okay, this is getting really interesting. We have a potential key player, TFDP2, linked to cellular damage in OSA. So the million-dollar question for anyone thinking about new treatments is, what does the current main treatment, CPAP, do to this gene? Does it fix it?
That's exactly what the researchers wanted to know. They looked into this, again, using some of those external data sets, specifically ones that had data from patients before and after they started CPAP therapy. They wanted to see if CPAP treatment changed the levels of TFDP2 transcripts, the gene's activity. The finding, at least in the data sets they were able to analyze, was pretty clear. No significant alterations. No significant changes in TFDP2 transcript levels were observed after patients went on CPAP therapy.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Unexpected, maybe. So CPAP keeps the airway open, stops the apneas, improves oxygen, but it doesn't seem to normalize the levels of this particular gene potentially involved in ongoing cellular damage.
That seems to be what this data suggests, yeah.
And did they check if maybe there are already drugs out there that happen to target TFDP2, anything we could repurpose?
They did look. They searched a database called DGIDB, which is specifically designed to map known interactions between drugs and genes. and their search came up empty for TFDP2.
Meaning?
Meaning no FDA-approved drugs currently exist that are known to specifically target TFDP2.
Okay. Right. Let's try and synthesize this now, thinking about what it means for, you know, future therapies. We followed the trail, identified key mRNAs using ML, linked them to target genes and pathways like apoptosis, and pinpointed TFDP2 as a really interesting candidate gene that seems altered in OSA across different tissues.
Yeah.
Then we learned that CPAP, the main treatment, doesn't seem to affect TFDP2 levels, and there are no existing approved drugs specifically for it.
Exactly. That whole combination of findings is what makes this potentially exciting. It suggests that while CPAP is fantastic for treating the mechanical problem, the airway obstruction, and the immediate consequences like low oxygen, it might not fully address certain underlying molecular or cellular issues, like whatever pathway involves TFDP2.
Right.
And given the, you know, the real progress that's happening in developing therapies based on targeting specific mRNAs or genes, the source even mentions an example, a successful mRNA-based drug called miriversin for hepatitis C.
Ah, okay. So it is possible.
It shows the potential. So approaches that are aimed specifically at these pathways, maybe including TFDP2 or the mRNAs that regulate it, they could represent genuinely novel ways to perhaps modify the disease process itself in OSA, not just treat the symptoms. And that could be really important for those patients whose problems aren't fully solved by CPAP alone.
Now, it's important we also mention, as the study authors themselves point out, this is a significant piece of research, but like any study, it's not the final word. It has limitations, right?
Yeah, absolutely. For instance, that initial discovery phase, the RNA sequencing, used a relatively modest sample size, 53 patients. That's standard, but larger would always be better.
Yeah.
And crucially, this study identifies strong associations and potential mechanisms. It uses computational predictions. But it didn't include, say, experimental lab work like studies in cells or animal models to definitively prove the causal relationships.
Meaning showing that these specific mRNAs directly regulate TFDP2 and that this regulation directly causes, say, cell death in actual OSA-relevant cells.
Exactly. That mechanistic validation is a key next step for future research. And they also mentioned, remember, that they were intentionally a bit broad, permissive, in their initial mRNA selection criteria to make sure the machine learning algorithms had enough candidates to work with effectively. These are all fair points, typical limitations that just highlight where more research is needed to build on these findings.
Okay, great. So pulling it all together, what does this really mean for you, the listener? This deep dive into really just one comprehensive source, it shows how researchers are pushing beyond just the mechanics of OSA, beyond the airway, to explore its fundamental molecular roots.
Yeah, by cleverly combining that mRNA analysis in the blood with powerful tools like machine learning and bioinformatics, they managed to zero in on three key plasma mRNAs, LITS7D5P, miR-R15A5P, and miR-107. And maybe even more importantly, they highlighted their predicted target gene, TFDP2.
And this gene, TFDP2, seems linked to these really vital cellular processes, including cell death, which, as we heard, is already thought to be part of the problem in OSA pathology.
Right. So these findings, they offer a new perspective, a new lens on OSA. They suggest that at least part of the condition involves specific molecular and cellular dysfunction, not just the physical airway collapsing.
And the fact that the main therapy, CPAP, doesn't seem to impact this TFDP2 pathway, according to this data, and there are no drugs for it, well, that really opens the door for exploring potentially new, maybe even disease-modifying treatments down the road.
So think about this. You have this gene, TFDP2, linked to cell death. Its levels are altered in OSA, but not corrected by CPAP. It really raises a powerful question, doesn't it? Could targeting specific molecular pathways, like the one involving TFDP2, offer a way to actually treat the underlying cellular damage in OSA, damage that current therapies might not fully address?
And maybe thinking even bigger, what other complex diseases out there, you know, where symptoms hang around despite the best current treatments, could they benefit from this kind of deep dive, this combination of looking at tiny molecules like mRNAs and using sophisticated computation to unravel gene networks and find completely new therapeutic angles?
It's definitely a promising approach for complex diseases. A lot to consider.
Indeed. A lot to think about as research like this keeps pushing the boundaries of what we understand. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Thank you.